It is propitious that today we are bringing you a segment on primary water, new water for humanity. Let me tell you a few things. 2/3 of the earth is covered with water. Only 3% of it is fresh. 99% of all of the earth's fresh water is frozen in ice caps and glaciers. The remaining 1% of the earth's fresh water is all that is readily available for personal agriculture or industrial use. I'll tell you something else. More than 1.1 billion people in the world lack access to clean drinking water. One child dies every 8 seconds, and 2.3 billion people are without basic sanitation. The man you are about to meet today is a professional water locator. He has been locating water for 33 years, utilizing an ancient art and science called dowsing. He is responsible, along with Vern Cameron, his mentor, teacher, and great friend, in locating the water in what was then dried up Lake Elsinore. His name is Bill Cox. He is bringing you a discovery that most of the world has no idea exists. He has written the book Techniques for Pendulum Dowsing, Aqua Video, The Psychology of Treasure Dowsing, The Original Cameron Orometer. He has also completed a DVD with Mystery Science Series, Discover Dowsing, Learn to Bridge Logic with Intuition. What you're about to hear today is that there is a universe of water that is available to those who need it throughout the world that has nothing to do with rainfall. Ladies and gentlemen, the honor's mine. Welcome, Bill Cox, to It's Rainmaking Time. Good morning, sir.
Nice to be here.
Thank you very much for being here. I want you to tell people, what is primary water, and how come they don't know about it?
A primary water, in its origin, comes from above the magma, which is about 2 to 3 miles down below the Earth's surface. And it is created anew by geochemical action, the mixture of hydrogen and oxygen and some other elements. And it is heated as superheated steam, and it ascends up through fractures in igneous rock below the surface. And at times it arrives at the surface of the Earth, free-flowing. Old Faithful in Yellowstone National Park, for example, will be example. Here is the steam coming up, and that is primary water. Now, science, because they don't embrace this idea of primary water, they say that all water comes from rainfall, percolates down into the underground, and when it hits this hot part above the magma, it is recycled back up. And that does occur, but that is not the only source. This is new water, and when it reaches the Earth's surface, it is water that is obtainable at economically feasible cost if you know where to find it and how it's done. That's what I do. That's what I've been doing all these years.
One of the things that struck me, first of all, about the discovery of primary water is that most people don't know it exists. How can it be that most of the world does not know it exists?
Well, the formally educated engineers, hydrologists, they go on the principle that all water comes from rainfall and does, again, percolate into the underground and is recaptured by hydrostatic pressure from higher elevation and lands underground where the water comes up in through aquifers, kind of like an underground stream bed.
For those of us who don't know, what's an aquifer?
An aquifer is really like an underground stream bed. It's usually made up of cobblestones, rocks, gravel, sands, and soils. And the whole principle of it is that they believe that this will collect in places, and they call them water tables or ponds, underground. And they hope to drill into those sources to get the water for the surface. But the trouble with this water supply, that it can be overdrawn, and it is also subject to the vagaries of weather. In areas where there's little or no rainfall, or a lack of rainfall, these sources tend to dry up.
We have droughts all over the world in many developing countries, and non-developing countries even. And I understand through reading your material that you can locate water even in earthquake faults. How does that work?
In fact, earthquake faults are my friends. Again, with conventional engineering, I've been advised on a number of occasions, you'll never get water in earthquake faults, with engineers standing around telling me while well drilling's going, but we get water anyway in earthquake faults. But the earthquake faults act as conduits. The fractured rock provides channels for the water to flow through in all directions, horizontally, diagonally, and vertically upward.
Do you think that by locating water in earthquake faults, you could cause an earthquake?
Well, there,
I mean, some of you got to be thinking about that. He's in an earthquake fault. He's locating. He's finding, but we're getting rumbles. Could that happen?
Well, that's coming more like from oil. They think that when they're drawing too much oil from the underground,
yes,
it does create subsidence, which then causes a possibility of earthquakes, like Terminal Island area and Long Beach and so on.
You also have stated that this water is into perpetuity and inexhaustible. How is that possible?
The earth is really a good part of the earth, has a tremendous amount of hydrogen, and also has the element of oxygen. When you put those two together, you got H2O, which they teach us in grammar school or the early education, and you mix those two and you got water. And it's, we're talking about primary new water. That's why it's been named primary.
How far do the engineers and the drillers have to go? I mean, is there a certain, do you go 200 feet, 50 feet, 500 feet, thousands of feet of drilling?
Well, a primary water is formed, in most cases, very deep in the earth, but it can be all the way down to the magma, which is, again, as I mentioned, about 8-9 kilometers, a couple miles, 2-3 miles. My job, what I do, is to find it where you can capture it at or near the Earth's surface.
Most people also have never heard of dowsing, also referred to as water witching. I would imagine that many people in Colorado and in other areas of the world are unfamiliar with it and possibly suspect, because if you don't use the conventional method of engineering, geology, and drilling, that how is it that you're doing what you're doing? I think first it would be good to explain, what is dowsing?
Mm-hmm. Well, dowsing goes back, you can find evidence of it in the Bible. And in ancient times, Egypt and Sumeria and some of the civilizations that go back thousands of years, you'll see that they use pendulums and rods, divining rods. And I prefer to use the word divine instead of witching.
Okay.
But anyway,
I am corrected.
Well, no, that's all right. It's commonly used. People ask me if I'll witch a well, and I say, no, I prefer to divine a well or douse a well for you. But anyway, witching has a negative connotation, particularly in religious
context.
I agree
with you. As long as you don't call me a witch, I'll let you talk about divining.
Yeah.
How's that?
That sounds good. Well, you know, divine gets closer to the angels, you know.
Explain it, because it's really true. Could be pretty obtuse and out there.
All right. Well, actually, it's been found, and most anyone can do it, but with differing degrees of skills or ability or natural tendencies to douse for water. And basically, its most primitive form is cutting a fork switch or a wand, a limb, a green limb from a tree, and holding it before you. And when you get over water, underground water, the wand or switch will respond. And in some cases, it's quite dramatic. You know, the switch will just wave up and down and even peel off the bark in their hands when people are holding a fork switch. So it's there is some kind of a resonance that occurs between the wood and the water itself. But actually, you see, we have water in our bodies in the form of blood or fluids. And so we are water persons. And so there is an affinity with like kind. And so it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be holding water in your hand. You can reach out beyond, because there's water in the atmosphere right now. We're breathing vapors and so on. So this is a connection. We're all interconnected with water, which is a universal solvent. And they're looking for water on Mars when there's already water there, we know, because they're finding it out in the cosmos. Water, there's vapors out there. The astronauts have encountered it. And there's vapors in the cosmos that have created ice on the moons of Saturn and Jupiter. And where did the ice come from? That's water, just in a more densified form. And so there's water everywhere. It's a part of the cosmos, at least that we can relate to.
The instrument that you use, though, is it moving because of an electromagnetic influence? In other words, what is it that's allowing it to move as a detection instrument when you're above water and you're holding the instrument? What is it that's allowing it to move? What is the phenomenon? Is it science? Is it magnetism? What is it?
It's a good question. Actually, the instrument itself becomes like an antenna to a radio. No radio will work if you don't. You have to have an amplifier, you have to have a tuner, and you have to have an antenna, and probably other things. But with those three, or any one of those missing, you have pretty poor reception or broadcast. So the instrument acts as a connector to the autonomic nervous system of the person who's doing the dowsing. Our nervous system is very sensitive to water and other things going on in the ethers, or whatever you want to call it, in the atmosphere around us for unknown distance.
So are we receivers, in effect?
We become a receiver with the instrument itself. But we also become a sender, because with dowsing, you go beyond that. You're trying to communicate. You're trying to telepath, like we call telepathic communication. You're trying to communicate with the water underground. You intentionally trying to find a certain kind of water, too, whether it's hot water or cold water or water that's moving or water that's still. In other words, you can learn to feel the difference of the activity of water and its behavior underground through this mechanism, this natural mechanism that we have. So we're electronic. We have, our brain waves emit electricity, very small amount of current, but we're electric in nature, and we're magnetic in nature. I could demonstrate with instruments that we have magnetism in our body as well as electricity. So this interconnects us wherever there's electricity or magnetism. It's an interconnecting thing on a very subtle level.
Do you have a way to introduce magnetism by any chance to the audience listening? Because magnetism seems to be a very critical element in well-being for human beings. In fact, the cutting-edge scientists and researchers are aware that there is something critical with our magnetic fields. Can you explain magnetism? Because I don't know how to explain it myself. Help me explain it to the public.
At the basic level, we think about the north and south poles of the Earth and the magnetic flux that's occurring with the Earth. And that also other planetary or celestial bodies also have magnetism. But magnetism at the level that I'm talking about with dowsing is what we call biomagnetism, where it affects the body, a living system. And so magnetism itself has a both attractive and repelling quality. Like poles repel, unlike poles attract. And you can do that with just two magnets. If you hold a north pole and a south pole together, the magnets will click together. They're drawn together. If you put two like poles facing each other, it'll resist. They don't want to connect.
So in fact, dowsing, if I'm listening to you correctly, is a bioorganic process, really,
yes,
of utilizing what we already have that's innate in us physiologically and biologically to tune in this case, the focus is water. Now, I understand in the art and science of dowsing, you can locate other things. You can locate people, you can locate oil, you can locate pretty much whatever you focus on once your faculty is developed enough. I'm sure audiences are wondering, can any of us do it, or is this just for an expert who's been at it 33 years and worked with a renowned pioneer?
In most cases, any rational, sane person can do it.
I guess I'm out of there. I guess I'm gone from this field.
When I say sane, if a person is demented, be a little more
difficult. I'm back in again. I'm back in. Don't worry, audience. Yeah, it's going to be okay. Don't worry who's at the helm here.
But and of all ages, it can be seniors, middle age, adults, youth, even children can douse. And there are a number of dowsing societies and chapters and groups all over the world where people get together and find out that they can douse. And they're quite thrilled with the discovery they can do it, and they're teaching one another. And there are a lot of amateur dowsers out there.
You know, people have asked me, I've been looking at this lovely pendulum. I've been practicing with it, really refining my intuitive capabilities with it. And some people have asked me, is this like working with a Ouija board? And I said, no, it's not. And I wonder if you could explain how they are distinct, or even if they're in the same realm.
Not really. Ouija board gets more into kind of a magical spirits process. And dowsing, some people claim that they douse with the aid of spirits, and that's okay because they do good work doing that. I don't. I think if I have a spirit working with me, he hasn't announced himself yet. Or she, or both.
That was a good correction, Bill. You're
okay.
Very, very, very politically correct. I'm proud. Keep going.
Well, anyway, dowsing is what it is. It's using this antenna, this instrument, you develop a system of codes so that certain reactions of the instrument will indicate a yes or a no or an uncertain situation. It'll tell you the intensity of what you're finding. And so what you're really doing is it's like ESP, but not extrasensory perception. It's extended sensory perception. You're extending your senses, and I'm extending my ability to touch at a distance. I know that sounds a little outrageous, but that's exactly what you're doing with dowsing.
Other people have said when you're holding the pendulum, or in your case, is it called orometer?
Orometer.
Some people have said, are you projecting your will and your desire into the instrument and thereby magnetically getting it to, go left, right, yes, no? Is that occurring?
That's a very good question. Amateurs, I get a lot of phone calls from all over the world from people say, why am I having trouble? It was working for a while, now it's not working anymore. Or what am I doing wrong? And usually that is true, that sometimes they're projecting their will. You cannot intellectualize an intuitive or a feeling thing. You can get the two to work together. And so the whole idea of it is to trust your intuition, your feeling side, let the intuition work, which is connected to higher mind, noetic mind, if you will, which then will allow information on another plane of knowing to come through to guide you to achieve what you're trying to do. But if you get in the way of that and you try to get your intellect to dominate the intuition, you're in trouble. The intellect sets up the program, the intuition finds it, and then relays it back for the intellect to process it, to evaluate it.
I guess the bottom line is this. You are stating today on radio that you can professionally locate primary water, a universe of water that most people in the world don't know about, aren't using, don't know how to find, and make water into perpetuity available to anybody in the world who needs it.
Yes, there are enormous quantities of primary water coming up from the underground in wells that I've located 20, 30 years ago, and my mentor before me 40 years ago, 50 or 60 years ago. These are still running. They have wonderful perpetuity because it's a new source of water and it's not dependent on rainfall. Here's the whole idea. When they say all water comes from the atmosphere or from rainfall, the engineers and what they teach in college, this is not entirely true. It's true that this does happen, but not all water. And the problem with it is that if that was the case when the Earth was first formed, where did the oceans come from before there was an atmosphere to rain down onto the Earth? So this is chemistry that made the oceans.
That's a great question. That's a very, very good point.
That's what made the oceans and the ponds and the lakes and the rivers and so on. And so we're talking about, and they call this fossilized water because of earthquake action over the years and upheavals of the earth. Water has been trapped underground. So there is such a thing as fossilized water, which came from early sources. We're getting water the same way the earth got the water back millions of years ago, hundreds of millions of years ago, through volcanoes. Volcanoes spew out carbon dioxide. And were the things that do create clouds and so on, which will rain down on the earth. So volcanoes are a good source of moisture for the atmosphere.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with It's Rainmaking Time and Bill Cox on a special segment on primary water. Ladies and gentlemen, We are in the commercial. Now I have to talk to you. Do you think that radio just happens where, you know, people are communicating with air particles? Because let me tell you something. Great radio gets to you via good advertising, great advertising, and sponsorship. We have 6 minutes available for sale on its rainmaking time. Now, let me tell you, some of you have radio spots ready to air on this show and would be interested. And some of you are interested and you do not have your spots ready. And that's okay, because we at the Rainmaking Company are going to design wonderful spots for you that are not only truthful, and I believe advertising can be totally truthful and never has to deceive the public, not one iota, to be good, catchy, great, and make a difference and have people thinking about your product, service, or business long after the show or the ad aired. So I'd like to welcome all of you. Pick up your pen and call the Rainmaking Company, 818-225-1885. Let me repeat, the Rainmaking Company at 818-225-1885. This is Kim Greenhouse, your founder and chief, and now back to its rainmaking time. Did you love that ad? Please say yes, everybody. Everybody say yes in your car or at your computer. And hello to Joanne Greenhouse, my lovely mother. Okay. The history of primary water. I'd like to hear about the history of primary water. And then I'd like to open up the calls and let the floodgates begin with questions from audiences around the world. Tell us about the history of primary water.
I'm carrying on with the science, which is well documented back into the 1890s, 1885, well performed and achieved in Scandinavia by Nils and Erik Nordenskiold.
That's a very complicated word. So, yeah. You want to repeat that one more time for us?
Nordenskiold.
Nordenskiold?
Nordenskiold. And there's two dots over the O.
It's so complex for me. Yeah. I don't think I could handle it.
Well, anyway, they pioneered it and from knowledge that they had previous. But they were very successful in locating wells on the seacoast of Scandinavia in hard rock and also getting fresh water when it was always a trouble with saltwater intrusion on other wells near the seacoast. They were drilling right into the coast, and they did it with such success. Erik wrote a paper, he was nominated for a Nobel Prize around 1900, I don't know the exact date, for this paper and the work that he and his father had done in this regard. So I'm a line of succession of people who are carrying on with this particular type of science, which is not supplemental to. I see it as primary, and the type of science that's being taught in colleges is supplemental to what we do. But they're two sciences, and I work with both. I work with primary water and conventional orthodox hydrology to some degree. So I work with both advantages, right and left brain, or the intuition and intellect, to do my work.
But also the hard science.
Yeah. But anyway, this is a succession of dowsers, and they're almost all of them have passed over, and they're flying with the angels somewhere now. And
well, you better not, because we need you all over the world. I mean, for the countries that are experiencing droughts, the billions of people that don't have access to fresh water, let alone any type of drinking water. And you're going to be needed all over the world.
Yes, I have a few proteges, but it's sad because I wouldn't want to see this science after all these years. Mr. Cameron, 44 years, and mine is 37 years.
37.
Down the chute, plus what we have gained from the other people who preceded us. So there are a succession of dowsers who did this type of work right on through. So I'm the last, but that I know of in a succession of dowsers using this particular science for locating primary water and having a good track record. That's important. It's more than just enough just to locate a site, but to see that baby come in, that's the real test. And the quality of the water.
Why do you think it is? And this question is not to open up any type of geopolitical issue, but I've always been curious, why is it that Lake Elsinore, as a project, when it dried up, didn't share with the public how the water was brought to them, and that that water that you and Vern Cameron filled was a different kind of water than rainwater. Don't you think that the public would have been interested to know that?
Well, again, we're back to conventional science, which says if you see water at point A and you want it down at point B, then you've got to build canals, pipelines, dams, and all of the tremendous, a lot of vested interest in this, too. There's a lot of money made in doing all this. This is a science, and it's found that dams don't work. They're damaging the environment, and they're silting up behind the dams, and they're taking Matilaha Dam out at Ojai out at a cost of $1 million or more dollars, I don't know how many million, to get rid of the dam because it's the trout can't swim upstream, and it's a mess. The beaches are eroding, so on. So anyway, this is an alternative to that, and it's a hard sell to those people who are into their occupation, their knowledge, and everything depends on the science that's been used, which doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work
to fulfill the greater good.
The fulfillment is not there. And so, anyway, primary water is another source, and I'm willing to go around and show, which I did in Japan and some places. The engineers are very interested, and they listen, and they wanted to be trained in it. But other areas, particularly in the North America, there's a lot of resistance. They just don't want to.
Well, I think now through video conferencing, first of all, I think people would be interested not only in video conferencing, but you teaching people throughout the world who are interested about this. I think we're at a crossroads in human history because now there is the ball is rolling for the privatization of water, so much so that KCET just aired a major documentary called Thirst last Tuesday night, about literally how fast it's happening, that water's being privatized. And it's the ball's rolling on a very serious level. And I think the public needs to know about that and take heed that my recommendation for these things is start making the water available all over the world to people who need it and just start doing it and doing it and doing it until there's no need to try to privatize the water because it's in perpetuity, there's plenty of it, and you just start it all over. You just start with the people that need it the most. So what I'd like to do is to invite the audiences who are listening to this show right now, whether you're hearing it streaming on the internet, in your car, or in your home, to call up the on-air 800 number to its rainmaking time, 877-625-3724, 1-877-625-3724. And I see Roberta in North Carolina has a question for Mr. Cox. Welcome, Roberta.
Thank you, and good morning, good afternoon. Kim, your show is great.
Thank you.
Thank you,
I
Roberta.
I just love it. And Mr. Cox, I have two questions for you, sir. You're very brilliant, and I thank you so much for your wisdom. The first question is, how would you feel that you could get water from a desert, from the Gobi, from the Sahara, or the deserts that are creeping up all over the world with great frequency? And the second question is, what do you think the percentage of water is in the earth versus the percentage of water in the oceans, rivers, streams, and ponds? If that is a possible two-question
focus questions
for you,
Roberta.
I'd be thrilled. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Roberta. Question one is that this is a tough term to use in front of a hydraulic engineer. Water, the chemistry in above the magma is in inexhaustible supplies. The word inexhaustible sounds a little weird, but nobody knows how much is down there, but it's a tremendous amount. And so my wells that I've located, Mr. Cameron's, after 75 years, are still flowing. So here's the whole idea. The desert, where there's very little rainfall, you're getting the water from the underground as a new source. And it can be fossilized water, which is millions of years old, or it can be new water, which is created by geochemistry in the earth. So what I do is to find it so you don't have to drill 2-3 miles down into the magma to get it, where it's occurring very near the earth's surface. That's what I do. That's my science. Now, in answer to section two there, question two, is that they call this desertification. We were going to bring that up a little bit. Brittle environments. This is area where there's not enough water to support trees, vegetation, and forests. So these brittle environments are encroaching. Every year, there's an enormous amount of vegetation being lost to the earth due to desertification. So in the desert, we're not dependent on 2 inches of rainfall to support a well, to support the water of the rivers or whatever, that we drill down into the underground and get new water. And it's there in the desert, probably more easy to get than it is in an area where there's a lot of rainfall, because there's a tendency just to look for water shallow underground for rainfall percolated water, whereas primary water is deeper, but it finds its way up through fractures and pipes, vents and openings in fractured rock, and comes near the surface. That's what I do. My science is not at war with conventional hydrology. I use both.
I have a question. Is Roberta still there?
Yes.
Okay, Roberta, did you get your questions answered?
Yes, I have one follow-up.
Okay.
And that is, are there fractures underground under the deserts? I'm concerned about the huge amount of deserts that are existing every year and more with solar radiation. So are there fractures under the desert as well as under regular land masses?
Yes, there are fractures underwater in the oceans and under the desert sands. And this is part of the earth below the surface of the earth. There's a lot of what we call igneous rock. Granite, limestone is another type. It's a sedimentary rock. And this fracture is because due to earthquake activity. And believe me, there's plenty of earthquake activity all over the world. And these fractures open up these vents and allow the water to come up, be released from deeper levels.
All right, Roberta, did we handle your questions?
Yes, thank you so much, both of you. I appreciate your program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who has any questions for Bill Cox today on primary water? Okay, I want to move to another part of this segment, which is for people who are interested in making primary water available to developing countries, to places where there are droughts, Africa, India. India now has begun the privatization of water, so much so that there are big, big wars going on. Not wars where there's killing, but wars on an energetic level, because so many people are not being given access to this and have to buy bottled water by either European countries or American companies that go into this country and begin selling them their own water. So for those of you who are out there who are hearing this broadcast today, who A, would like to be part of a team that lets people know that there is primary water, B, would like to have your own water well on your land without intruding into what's called public, what's the right word for this?
Well, like trespassing on a neighbor's underground sources.
Yes, how? Well,
primary water avoids most of that problem.
How?
Well, because when you drill, if you're drilling into a pond or a basin, the basin or pond could also extend under your property line to the neighbor's. Okay. And so the neighbor thinks when you're pulling water out of that, you're getting his water too. Primary water is an independent source. It can commingle with shallow waters, with rainfall percolated water, but it's a separate source.
Great. We have Rick from Baltimore holding. Welcome, Rick.
Hello, how are you today?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, we've had a big problem down here and in Maryland. What happened is there's an Exxon station, and they've had some big problems with their leaking, and it's leaking into our water. Their gasoline's leaking through, and it's causing us major problems.
When you say problems, what kind of problems are you talking about besides the obvious?
It's got into all the drinking water in the area.
Oh, my God.
And we've had to close down the station, all the Exxon stations in this part of town. We've closed a couple stations down
What is your specific question? I'm very sorry to hear that that's happening. What's your question to Bill?
Yeah, what does he think we should do? Should we move, or should we just move into a different area?
First of all, most of the water that is being contaminated in your area, I suspect, is shallow sources, what we call shallow sources, in aquifers, again, water veins. And this is water that can easily be contaminated for a number of reasons by upstream or upland users and so on. But in your case, it sounds like it might be flat. Your land is reasonably flat. So what's happened is that you have your main water sources there are coming from conventional hydrology. I'm talking about primary water where you drill deeper, and you can, the drillers have skills, right, and there's engineering where they can seal off those at levels where contaminated waters are coming into the well, and they can plug it up with cement and then drill back through it and cement that off. There are different techniques for sealing out contaminations that are coming into a well and polluting it. So I suspect probably what's happening with your stations, if there are this leakage, is going into this type of source where it's affecting the wells. There's not much can be done about it.
Leakage. What is your suggestion to him specifically at this point for his well-being and family and friends?
Well, one way for the people who have wells, if they're willing to spend the money, is to drill down through these levels where this percolation or this saturation of contaminants in the water can be sealed off. And so whoever's doing the engineering there probably doesn't allow for the fact that there's any water below where the sources are now. They figure it's probably like a water table or a pond or a basin of water, and that's being contaminated. But instead of drilling through that, and that's a lot of times when I make a recommendation, they drill through that and then seal that part of the well off from that penetration.
Rick, what do you do?
Right now, well, I'm just a driver for Papa John's right now, and We love bottled water, so it hasn't really been that big of a problem. But it's been a shocker in Baltimore, and it's been a major news story. And some people are selling their homes, and the values have diminished a little bit, not much, but they've gone down a little bit. Should we just wait till it clears up and hope for the best? Is that what you guys would probably do?
Well, water has a marvelous capability to cleanse itself underground if it's allowed, if the contamination is not too strong and too concentrated. Water can move some short distance underground and clean itself. But it sounds to me like this may be a major source of pollution, which there's no place for it to find new channels that are not already contaminated. But anyway, I think the answer is that this depends on the support from government and investors, and this is not easy to get because the mindset of hydrologists and engineering is that there is no such thing as primary water.
I think also on a practical level, that's at the like the geological, geopolitical surrounding situation and condition. On a specific level, if I may add, even though I'm not a water expert, I do tons of research, I would not only filter your water in your home or apartment or condo, wherever you live and wherever you are, I would also pick up a book that you may be interested in by Olaf Anderson called Living Water, which talks about implosion water, how you literally can change the frequency of the water that you're drinking. It sounds out there, but this man was Victor Schoberger in The Secrets of Natural Energy, was so advanced in his understanding of water, like Bill Cox, that the European government and scientists commissioned him to give all of his knowledge, including patents and discoveries, to them, and they have had it for over 50 years that most of the world doesn't know about. He talks about how the water spins and how you get water to spin a certain way. It's called implosion water, and the technology and science behind it. That's one thing I would do. Not only filter your water at the tap and make sure that you read a little bit about the filtering, because not all filters are the same, but there's also something to be said for living water. And you may want to call a gentleman named Michael Lund, who has a company called Alive Water, www.alivewater.net, and check into his products. He is part of Living Water and provides the structures that you attach to your sink, that you attach to your water line, your main water line, and your faucets everywhere, from bathrooms, kitchen, etc., to establish this implosion water. So you could have a filtration at the beginning, and then you add this to it. And I think this is like possibly a first level of defense. Again, nobody has the right to tell you what you should do. You're going to have to trust your own intuition, your own instinct, and follow your own guidance on this. But I really appreciate you coming to the call, making the call this morning, and asking your question to Bill. Is there anything else we can do to serve you?
Well, I mean, this has been a great phone call, and I really appreciate your time.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure. And also feel free, Rick, to go to www.itsrainmakingtime.com, the front end of the broadcasting site, and leave questions. And also, it's time and appropriate that Primary Water Associates, we give you all Bill Cox's information. Bill, why don't you go ahead and give them your direct contact number?
I can be reached in Ojai, California, which is near Santa Barbara, 805-649-5735. That's 805-649-5735. We have a primary water site, Primary Water Associates. It's
primarywater.com. We're making Bill become very official here. I would also like to let all of you know that very rarely do you get a chance to hear much truthfulness about announcers or presenters. And I want you all to know that I have a deep commitment to making a difference in the world. And I love bringing great work to the world and privileged to help bring not only modern-day discoveries, new knowledge and information, which is very important to you having real choices that give you freedom to choose. It's like if you don't have information that's true in your universe, that's reliable, you can't really say you have dominion about your life and your work and your world, because you're missing vital frames of reference that you would have made a different decision otherwise had you known. So I want you to know that this show is an extension of me. While it's separate, it's connected to me. It's the heart of who I am, which is to bring you new knowledge and ancient knowledge that has been buried that is so important for your well-being and your community and family's well-being and the world around you, that's what I'm really here for. I am a consultant. I really am a rainmaker for a better world. I have a marketing and communications background. I love putting things together. I'm a natural-born strategist and packager and social architect. And most of the problems with bringing new knowledge and information and discoveries to the world, whether it's in the form of new products, services, businesses, or even industries, has to do with packaging. Packaging, articulating those discoveries and solutions. I will also tell you that it's been my experience for the last 12 to 13 years as somebody who has worked and focused primarily on bringing a global systemic solution to the world that has to do with fast-tracking the speed upon which new knowledge and discoveries are financed and brought to the world. I can tell you that the forces in place in opposition to the introduction and manifestation of new knowledge and discovery and solutions are great, not just because of, although primarily on a financial and geopolitical level, great because it rocks the world of the original infrastructure in which the solution is being introduced to, which I understand and I have compassion for. But I also want to suggest to all of you that solution delivery is not mere idea generation and dissemination. Solution delivery is the art and science of bringing through and manifesting solutions for the greater good. It is an art form, and there is a science to it that has to do with magnetism, that has to do with the laws of attraction, that has to do with intent and vision, and has to do with orchestration, which is something that I love and am called to bring all of my gifts and talents together. As far as I'm concerned, it's rainmaking time is a call to rainmakers or people who know you have this gift of being able to make things happen just because you desire it and wish it. I want to call all of you in to be part of making wonderful things happen throughout the world. I want to thank you for the gift of broadcasting. I want to welcome you all back to the show to listen next week and every Saturday to It's Rainmaking Time. God bless. Have a wonderful day, and I'll see you and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.